Well, hey there. This is Fish and Frank here, and you've got Radio Fishing. We've got kind of an interesting show for you today. We're going to feature Betty Stogler. She's our Sea Grant agent, and it's going to be a cool show all about their upcoming event with the some shellfish or something. I'm not sure. Yeah, I should be more aware, but Betty's going to tell us all about it. But anyway, this is Fish and Frank in the chair. I got Robert in the chair across from me, and we have Betty Stogler, our guest today. So let's get right to it. Good morning, Betty.
Good morning.
Oh, look at that. Yes, you always drive the crowd wild.
I try hard.
Yes, our studio audience, they just love you. It's just amazing. Okay, so anyway, quiet everybody. Okay, they're quiet now. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Yeah, I had 2 days off. It's hard to get back in the swing of things here.
Jump back in the electric chair?
Yeah, I jumped right back in the electric chair. I've been sitting here doing emails and all this other stuff. And what a day. So anyway, Betty, you have a scallop count coming up, right?
I do.
Okay, what's up with the scallop count?
Well, this is our sixth year. And what we do is I encourage the public to come out and help me. I'll accept up to 150 volunteers, 40 boats, and put them in the water, send them to select locations, have them find seagrass, set up a transect, which is essentially a straight line. They snorkel it and count.
Okay. Now, when does this take place?
July 26th, which is in 2 weeks.
Got 2 weeks to get ready for this, huh? Now, how many boats do you still need?
I'm not entirely sure. Probably.
I'm glad you're as well prepared as I am.
You know,
they
register online, and I don't get myself worked up about it until the week before.
Gotcha. So, but you still need boats.
I know I still have spots open.
And volunteers to snorkel.
Correct.
Okay.
Usually it's mostly boats that I need.
What's wrong, Robert?
Count me out.
What do you mean, count you out?
I'm not snorkeling.
You're not snorkeling?
No, I don't get in the water past my kneecaps.
You can be in the boat and record data.
Yeah, there you go. I could do that.
Okay. Well, so what's all this about?
Well, in Southwest Florida, we used to have very healthy bay scallop populations, and up until the early 90s, you could go out and harvest them. But because of water quality degradation and some seagrass issues, and some over-harvesting, we lost that population, and we haven't had sustainable populations since then.
So let me guess, June 1995, 18 inches of rain in 2 hours, flooding, bridges blown out, yards destroyed, docks ruined, everything. I mean, it was
a minor
catastrophic event. And then it really didn't stop raining for the rest of that year. And it ruined the habitat on the Lower Peace River, west side, east side. We had, in the middle of the harbor, there was no seagrass. Nothing was happening. And it was really bad for a few years. Then a few years ago, we had that two-year drought.
Mm-hmm.
And that drought brought the harbor back to a huge degree. We have sawfish and flounder, and I'm surprised it didn't bring the scallops back. But now, to me, it seems like the habitation and all that stuff is high there. But don't stingrays eat scallops?
Everything eats scallops.
So, to me, now, what I'm hearing, and I understand the habitat and all that is really, really bad, but we have a declining shark population.
Mm-hmm.
And sharks are the main predators of stingrays. And stingrays love eating scallops.
Mm-hmm.
And they cruise right along the bottom. It's, probably one of their past primary sources. But with a huge increase in the stingray population because of a lack of sharks, you think that have anything to do with it?
It could. There's a lot we don't know about bay scallops, and a lot of that is because they live such a very short life. They only live 1 year, so it's really hard to study them and get a good handle on them. And their populations fluctuate from year to year because they spawn in the water column, and if you get a bad wind or the wrong current, wrong tide, when those larvae are in the water, they're going to drift in the wrong direction and settle out, and that can have a huge impact as well.
Okay, that's kind of reminds me, after everybody went on this media hype about the snook kill and the freeze, and I was sitting there going, are you guys nuts? This used to happen every year, and mm-hmm. back in the 80s and the 70s, all the way up through till the 90s, then we had 15 years of no snook kills. So when we finally got another one, everybody was freaking out, the only, I think me and four other scientists, I'm not that I'm a scientist, I'm just an idiot with a bait shop, but one idiot with a bait shop and four other scientists went, yeah, we lost probably 20, 25% of the snook, and anything that was in three, four feet of water probably survived. And everybody was freaked out, but in order to get the snook population back, we've had several lucky years. Mm-hmm. And that is, right before the spawn, we need to get rain. And that rain will push the snook out to the salt water. If they spawn at the mouth of a canal or in the river, or, you know, they'll like come down to 41 and say, okay, I got enough salt, I can spawn here. And then we get a rain after that, then it kills most of the fry. Because they can't live, most of them don't live if they do it in freshwater. They have to have salt water to live for the little babies. And they're tiny, tiny microscopic creatures. But if they do it in salt water, most of them live. 98% live. They do it in freshwater, 98% die. Big difference. Mm-hmm. And do you think that kind of thing is, that's kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So bay scallops require very salty water. They have to have over 20 parts per thousand, which we're only going to find closer to our passes. So if they spawn and we get a large influx of rain or
a lot of west wind.
Right, right. Oh, and they need seagrasses as well. So if they settle out and there's no seagrass.
So do they attach to the seagrass?
They do. They do. When they come out of the water column, they attach to the seagrass and they actually grow their blade or their shell on the seagrass until it gets heavy enough that they fall to the seafloor. You generally just don't see them because they're that small.
So you've got a little seashell type thing. Now, mm-hmm. It's surprising stingrays and all that eat it because it does have a hard shell on it, but they kind of absorb the shell for the calcium and all the rest of that stuff when they eat them, I guess.
Right.
So, anyway, what's going on is when do they spawn? Any idea?
Late summer. So some of them may be spawning now. It's a temperature
change.
The exact
wrong time. I mean, if you gave them a book to do it wrong, this would be how to do it, because that's when we have the most fresh water, the most rains, the most heavy storms, everything late mm-hmm. summer. And it would just seem, after a few million years of this, they would have gone, okay, guys, let's try and spawn like November, January.
And I will tell you, the further south you come in Florida, the one thing that I've noticed in Charlotte County and in Lee County as compared to the rest of the state is we do have some spawning that occurs throughout the year. In fact, I'm finding some of those, we call them spat, the ones that have settled out of the water column that are just growing their shell. I found some in June. So, on some of my monitoring devices. So
okay, because that to me would make more sense, because if they live in South Florida and they spawn late in the fall, they're pretty much doomed to extinction.
Right.
You know, because,
well, you know.
You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be cruel about the scallop. I'm just saying it would just seem to me that we have all this beautiful moderate temperature water from, you know, January through June. And
that's when they're growing the fastest. So they're actually spawning when they're at the end of their life. Because they're going to spawn, and then they put so
unlike
much
us.
Effort. Yeah, they put so much effort into the spawn.
I don't know. At the end of my life, I'm not doing much of that. I'm going to lie.
They spawn, they die. That's pretty much a scallop's life.
Oh, boy, we wouldn't have a teenager left, would we?
No, we would not.
No. So anyway, yeah, it just kind of a weird how each creature develops its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing how the environment impacts them is a big thing.
Well, and scallops are kind of like an indicator species, aren't they?
They are. You know, so they're, in terms of bivalves, they are probably...
Bivalves is a clam? Or
bivalves is anything with two shells.
Okay.
So a clam, an oyster, bay scallop, they're all considered bivalves.
All right, so any bivalve, I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt
you. Okay, so out of all the bivalves that we have here, bay scallops are probably the most sensitive to changes in water quality, and so they are considered an indicator species, because if you have healthy bay scallop populations, then that's an indication that you have a healthy estuary.
Okay, now, this is going to come up July 26th.
July 26th is the count, yes.
I'm saying that, I think that's Saturday?
That is a Saturday, yes.
Okay, Saturday, July 26th. Now, where is this, where do you launch the boat? Where do you come out of? Where does this all come about?
It's all staged at a Gasparilla Marina, so boats launch at the Placida Boat Ramp generally, and then motor over and meet us at the dock, and then I do an orientation. They get the gear. and then they get captain's packets where they're assigned to different locations to snorkel.
Okay, so you meet at the dock at Gasparilla Marina. What time is that?
They meet, well, they start coming in about 8:30. Registration opens at 8:30. I do my orientation at 9. They go out to their respective locations. They have to be back in by 1. I feed you lunch. You get a t-shirt. And the events are over at 2.
Now, when you get out on the water, you're going to go to a specified location on a map.
Correct.
And anchor the boat up.
Yep.
Now, people get out in the water, and what do? Take a string with a couple of stakes on it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a weighted line that has floats on, so it's weighted.
So you've got an anchor weight at one end with a float.
Yeah, essentially.
And then you walk it out to, and is it by compass line or?
No, you're just, as long as you're in the seagrass, you're just walking a straight line out. It doesn't matter which direction you're going.
So you drop the anchor and the buoy at one end and walk the other end out, drop the anchor and the buoy, and then what do you do along the line?
Okay, so each snorkeler, and there's going to be two snorkelers on the line, they each have a 1 meter pole, which is essentially 3 feet.
Okay.
And they are pushing the pole up against the line.
So, wait a minute. They get a stick.
A stick. They get a stick and
on each side of the pole, you got two people, each one with a stick to keep them within 3 feet of the line.
Of the line, correct. And they're snorkeling along and they're moving their fingers through the seagrass looking for bay scallops because they're kind of hard to
find.
Now,
do you hold the stick in your teeth or what do you do with this?
No, you hold it in your hand and you kind of push it.
Oh, you push the stick into the grass?
Yeah.
And then kind of dig through it?
Dig through and look for the bay scallops.
Basically, you're brushing looking for lice.
There you go.
Yes, you know,
it's essentially the same concept. Yeah, you're laying the seagrass over and like you're hunting for lice on a kid.
Yeah, if you've ever had your kid in school in Florida, you know what this is about. Take the little comb, rake through it, look, okay, there's, pull them out. So
they do this the entire length of the transect, which is roughly 150 feet. This is 50 meters. And they're only counting the scallops that are within that pole distance.
Right.
That assures that every single person is doing the same distance and area, so
right.
It makes it...
So many square feet.
Right.
Three by 150 is, that's 450. That's something.
Yeah. For me, it's 100 meters square.
100 meters square. That's what I was looking for. So each person, you want them to check on a specific area for 100 square meters.
Correct.
So that once you... Then you can kind of extrapolate out by seagrass.
Right. And they're also going and they're snorkeling around. And if they find scallops, they make notes of those. But the actual count is just with what's within that 100 meter square.
Okay.
And they do that four
now,
times.
How big are the scallops you're looking for? Quarter inch? Eighth inch? Two inch?
Could be all of the above.
So...
Again, because... It seems like our spawning cycle is a little bit off in Southwest Florida. We can find them at all sizes, whereas if you moved north, you would be finding bigger scallops.
Now, one of the things, there's a bait fish in South America that's heavily, commercially, it's heavily taken. Recreational, it's heavily taken. A lot like our white greenbacks, thread fins, and all that here. And what the research is saying down there is they've changed their spawning to try and overcome this extinction event by people taking too many of them. So they're actually, instead of spawning once a year, they're spawning 2, 3, 4 times a year. And these fish are trying to adapt to overcome this overpredation by humans.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be what the scallops are doing. They might be saying, listen, we gotta, you know, kick this in gear. We gotta start making more babies because we're not getting it here.
Well, they certainly can spawn more than once, and generally they do spawn more than once as long as they're still alive to do so. But the other thing that we've been doing...
So you're saying dead scallops don't spawn as well as live scallops?
Well, that's... Yeah, generally that's the case. Yes. But the other thing that I want to point out...
I ask such good questions, don't I?
You do. I've been putting bay scallop larvae in the water, and... That's, you know, the ones that are still free-floating before they drift out. And so it's very possible that just because of the restoration...
So how are you getting, this is cool. You're actually putting the bay scallop larvae out. How do you get this? Were you milking scallops? Are you growing them? Or?
Well, just like a cow, yeah.
I mean, come on. I'm sorry. Okay, where do you get these larvae from?
Okay, well, healthy area. So our last batch came from Crystal River. We went up and we harvested the adults. We took them to a commercial lab or a commercial hatchery, and they actually do the spawning. You know, candlelight, wine, all that good stuff. And
cool.
Nice. Where do I get a ticket for this event?
Yeah, it's good stuff. But they grow the algae in tanks. They have a flow through system, and they'll grow them up to 10 days old. And 10 days is when they're ready to settle out of the water column. That gives them the greatest chance of survival. And that's when I come and get them. And it essentially looks like a bucket of dirty water when I get it.
Right.
And we put them in select locations. We've also put some juveniles out this year. I've been, you know, I'd take those, the little larvae, and I'd raise them up into different size classes and put them out as well. So it's very possible that some of that off-cycleness is a result of us just hammering the area with bay scallops at different times of the year too.
But this is a very cool thing, you know.
I hope
I'm
so.
I'm sorry, Betty. We didn't even know you were the mother of scallops.
I'm trying so hard. Oh, gosh.
Our scallop mom here.
I have no.
Other areas have soccer moms. We have scallop moms.
Can I have one of those little things for the back of my car? You know, the little.
Sure.
Yeah.
The little be a little stick
little
finger. Scallop shell.
Yeah, the little stick figure of you and your skirt.
All my little children in various sizes.
Yeah. All your little spat.
Yeah, that's cool. No, that's very cool. Now, Betty is our Sea Grant agent, and Sea Grant exists on grants from the state, the federal level, and the county, and private donations. And Betty's been here a long time. She does amazing stuff, and not just because she's sitting here. Ask me anytime, I will tell you. One of the smartest people I've ever met. I mean, and you've been, they've had you go to Thailand or
Indonesia. Yeah.
You were in Indonesia because you were doing studies and work over there, and you get asked to do all kinds of stuff.
I do. It's a great job because you never know what you're going to do from one day to the next.
And
rewarding.
And also being a Sea Grant agent, I mean, it's not just the scallops you do. I mean, you do a multitude of different things involving the harbor itself.
Yes.
Water quality, reefs.
Yeah. Like I said, every day is different.
We're going to talk about some of this stuff because I'd like to.
Some amazing, amazing things that you do.
You know, one thing that we need to test and you need to find out, the old rubber tire reef, I know they don't want anybody doing anything here because it sinks into the bottom, but the bottom is down there. It's about 15, 20 feet down.
I've dove it.
No. I mean the bottom below the mud.
Right. But I've dove over the reef.
Right.
Yes.
And there's very little structure there because everything just kind of sinks.
You see it, but it's just kind of flat on the bottom.
Why can't we, can we get some type of permit to redo that starting at like the pilings, and we take and go just crisscross and just keep setting up a base? And it would take a few years, but eventually that base is going to hit the hard layer on the bottom, which is about 15, 20 feet down, and then we can build it up to put something, a small, nice, I was thinking like PVC reef or something like that. It can't be PVC, obviously, but we could do it out of, you know, like aluminum pipe, or just to give the fish a little relief there, because it's very popular with fish and a little bit with fishermen. But this is a good spot. And it's like, I'd like to build the middle of the Alligator Creek Reef, but I'd like to do it differently. I'd like to do it with almost like little umbrellas, and take some stainless steel, put a concrete base on it, bring it up like an umbrella to create relief. And just short little umbrellas stuck all around there. The fish would go underneath it. They would have a center pole and, say, eight sides, so each one would have a support, and then almost a solid roof on it, and just make it out of stainless or aluminum. And that would provide some unbelievable habitat, you know, little umbrellas.
Mm-hmm.
For a better way of putting about it, can something like this be done either at the Alligator Creek Reef or eventually a build up and then redo the rubber tire reef with like 2-foot umbrellas?
I can tell you that the old tire reef, no. And the reason being is because it no longer meets the state's requirements for construction of artificial reefs. Even though there's something already there, they won't reopen a permit for it.
Gotcha.
Because it's not deep enough. All reefs have to be in at least 12 foot of water mean low, and that's only 6 to 9.
Well, I got 2 feet of... I got a couple of sticks of dynamite. I'm sure I've got a little bit of
take care of the tires,
fire.
Too, right?
Just poof, and it will be bigger.
The Alligator Creek Reef, possibly. It's really hard to do anything inside our harbor because it is an aquatic preserve. It's not impossible to do.
But that makes... That's pure government ease for the really stupid. We have the densest government. Tallahassee, listen up. Our government is so ridiculously stupid. It's leave everything alone and let it die. We prove we can farm, we can raise things, we can grow things, and we do it better than nature. Nobody likes the way nature looks at all. You go out, and the first thing when somebody sees a beautiful area, you go, oh, it looks like a park. That's because we build better than nature does. Mm-hmm. And the canals, they hold more fish than the creeks. The creeks are all eroding in. We need to farm this area. We need to maintain it, work with it, keep it going. We've only given nature this much room, and now we say live with it. Nature's okay when they had the whole planet, but we don't allow them the planet. We only allow them this much room. So I'm calling really stupid government people. I mean, I don't know how you work for the government. You are way too intelligent.
I try to say I work for the university, and we're a little not quite as bad as But one thing to think about with the Alligator Creek Reef is, you know, sometimes when we have big freshwater inflow, we get hypoxic events, which is when we lose our oxygen in the bottom waters.
Right.
That reef structure, because the water hits it, it actually creates turbulence, and it prevents hypoxia.
Right.
So that reef is a good thing to have when you have
It's an excellent
thing. Yeah.
Now,
it's a hard fight to get people to buy into that, but we've seen it on some of our surveys.
But it just makes sense. You've got dead water on the bottom because lakes roll over and a lot of fish die, and they spray that weed killer on it, and the plants die, and they decay, suck all the water out of the oxygen, all the fish are dead because they spray for these weeds. It is not toxic in its own self, but the end result is no different than if you just sprayed poison in the water, because most of the fish die because of spraying the weeds. But in the harbor, to keep everything alive, it goes back to what I said. We can build better than nature. We know what to do. We know how to do it. We no longer build straight rivers and canals because it doesn't work. They have to have curves in order to filter and do everything. Deep spots, shallow spots. We know all this stuff. We build better than nature. I'd like to put these umbrella rigs in the deep holes. I'd like to put them in the middle part of the reef. See what would happen. Wouldn't be very expensive. You know, I'll take part of the cost and get donations for the rest. But what I've noticed is fish like being under something.
Absolutely.
And if we built these umbrella style things, the shellfish would cover up the tops of it, and if you put it solid at the beginning, it would blow away with the current. But if you made it like the frame of an umbrella, then allow the shellfish and stuff to fill it in, that adds weight, and by the time they fill it in, it's too heavy to blow away. But I just, you know, I think the reef balls was a cool idea, but they fill in too quick from what I've seen. The shellfish grow over the holes.
Right.
It just, they become a hollow ball. Everything inside is just trapped inside unless it's very small. And so I was thinking about these umbrella rigs, and I just want to know what we would have to do to try and maybe get some permits for that.
Just open it back up.
Okay. Well, I'll work with you this year on getting that opened up, and I will get donations, money. I've got the guys to do the welding, and we'll have to talk about best types of materials, but I'd like to get on some of that, because we need to keep enhancing this if we're going to keep it going. And so back to this, we got July 26th. We've got Saturday, July 26th, 8:30, Gasparilla Marina.
Where's the website that they can sign up for it at?
Off the top of my head, I don't know what it is, but they can always call me at 941-764-4346 if they want information, and I can get them the link to register.
Well, what I'm going to do is there's a picture of Betty right next to this link, and we're going to find that website where you can sign
wonderful.
Up. And if you click her picture, you will be able to go right to the sign up, and we're going to put Betty's phone number so you can call her. And hopefully a few of you guys get out there and help out with the scallops. If you don't have a boat, I believe I have a couple, so if you don't have a boat and you want to go, don't worry about it. You can still sign up. We'll make sure there's boats there. Anything to add to all this nonsense, Robert?
Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, while they're out there doing the bay scallops, I mean, it's a good way to meet other people that are really interested and intent on the environment and learning about it. And, I mean, it's getting with you is literally like an encyclopedia of the harbor. I mean, you get to share all sorts of knowledge.
Having
and
you
wisdom.
And Betty in the same room is like my own little Encyclopedia Britannica right here. You know, it's like Jiminy Crickets. Now, you do classes like on environmental classes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they can sign up and become a
certified master naturalist.
Certified
master master naturalist.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Jeez. You know, I'm always surprised when it just tries to come out. You know, I think my base nature is trying to exert itself, you know, kind of like, you know, maybe I need an exorcism or something. Or maybe I just need to exercise a little.
Yeah, there you go.
So, anyway, Betty Stogler, C. Grant, and click Betty's picture. I'm going to put Betty's picture, and I'll put another icon, because we're going to use Betty's picture, I think, to get you to her C. Grant page so you can see all about her and all that. And then I'll put another little thing, click that, and that's going to take you to the sign-up page. It'll probably say sign-up page. I'm not very creative.
That's so,
sometimes simple is better.
Yeah, so I think that's the better idea. And we've had Betty Stogler. Anything else we need to go over, guys?
Not that I can think of.
Oh, I don't know if the crowd was just happy there was a great show or happy we're leaving. One way or the other, everybody's cheering. And we are just about. So anyway, click the pictures and the links right next to this segment and see some cool stuff about Betty. And we will be back with more Radio Fish in a little while. So thanks for listening, guys. This is Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and the ever lovely, talented, intelligent Betty Stogler, our Sea Grant agent.
Also in the chair.
Yes.
Nice. Nice touch.
All right. We'll see you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.